views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Well, I hope everyone is having a great day today. It is a great time to be alive. We have, let's face it, as far as history goes, we are in an amazing time in history. We have advanced technology everywhere, medical advancements we'd only dreamed of 100 years ago, and potential beyond our dreams. But at the same time, we also have a lot of instability. It's kind of ironic that we're in the best time of history, but also the most scary time of history. Economic debt, social unrest, terrorist activity, and outright criminal activity at the highest levels of government and society. You know, we take down criminals at the lowest level, but we need to look at criminals at all levels. Criminals need to get out of our society in general so that we can thrive and function great. But today we're going to talk about economic issues and the debt that we have worldwide, and not just debt, but the issues with fiat currencies and what's going on with the central banks and so forth. And so we have expert coming on. His name is Andy Hoffman, and he is the media director and financial expert for Miles Franklin. And we've had past guests on, so Andy Scheckman, who is the CEO of Miles Franklin, he's come on in the past. I have been told Andy Hoffman is the brightest guy at Miles Franklin, at least according to Andy Scheckman. He thinks that he's just a brilliant, and he is. And this interview is very eye-opening. We discuss global economic, global economic situation. We talk about Brexit, the EU, and of course the United States. But he brings to light many facets of the global economic situation that you may not be aware of. And also, what are the different central banks doing, and what are the policies going on, and how is that affecting the world? But this is a pretty explosive interview. You know, I attack everything wanting to figure out how to fix this situation. What can we do to make things better, right? I mean, what can politicians, what can our world leaders do? Of course, they need courage and they need the smarts to do it, because to do what's necessary is hard. It takes courage and it takes bravery. I mean, you have to get out there and get it done when everybody's going to be pointing fingers at you that you're the reason it failed, when actually you're making the steps to make it prosperous long term. So we need to see if we have a politician that's ready to go there, ready to do what's necessary to get this stuff done. And I think it's important that they listen to people like Andy Hoffman to figure out what really is going on. Talk to the inner people at the central banks, but talk to people who are going to tell you the truth, not somebody that has a different agenda, someone who's trying to maintain their billions at the expense of others. We have to do things that are smart and have the courage to listen to the people that know. So I'm hoping this will be a little bit of an eye-opening on what's going on. And now we're going to welcome Andy Hoffman to the program. Hello, Andy. Welcome to the program.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I heard you're the smartest man at Miles Franklin, so let's see.
Well, there's only about 10 of us, so, but that's a great honor because there's some smart people where I work.
Well, it's always fun to work around smart people. It gives you that energy. So,
yeah.
Okay, Are we in a recession currently, or what's going on?
Well, we've been in a recession. I mean, if real accounting were used since, I don't know, 2001, 2002, because, of course, the way theoretically a recession is measured is by whether GDP is negative or not, and GDP is measured by the nominal rate of output, which is goosed by all kinds of other things that shouldn't be in there in the first place, minus the rate of inflation as measured by the government, which is so massively understated, it's laughable.
So basically, they just keep manipulating numbers. But the more you manipulate, the more off it gets. And at some point, it's just going to be really difficult to make up for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a matter of confidence, because the whole point is trying to create the veneer that something that doesn't exist is the case. And, you know, a big part of that is manipulating stock markets as well. And, of course, the QE and all kinds of Federal Reserve machinations to lower interest rates to try to make it look like a lot of the activity going on is organic and, you know, and also suppressing the precious metal price so that it doesn't look like the inflation that they're hiding is actually there. But the fact is, as you said, the longer and longer this charade moves on, as you see all the real data behind the fake GDP data and inflation data, such as the highest level of entitlements that we've had probably in the history of the country, the highest level of debt, the lowest level of home ownership, the lowest consumer confidence. I mean, you name it across the board. Labor participation is back in the 1970s. Real income or real household income is back in the late 1970s, early 1980s.
And that's when women stayed at home. And now everybody's wanting to find jobs because they need it to pay their mortgages and to pay their bills.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, back in the 70s, you could have just dad, you know, what did your dad do for a living? You could just have dad working and we could make it. But now we can't.
Isn't that funny? Because we talk about the labor participation rate, and that's a good point you bring up, is for the country is back to late 1970s levels. But as you said, back then women weren't working. So if you look at the labor participation rate for men, it's at an all-time low level for the history of the country. And why is it that women had to start working in the late 1970s? Well, guess what? We went off the gold standard in 1971. Inflation exploded. Real wages went down. And therefore, people needed to start working. It's the exact same thing as that happened in my household. My father worked in a library and fed his family, and we had a pretty good middle-class life until that happened. And then my mom had to go back to school to learn to be a computer programmer in the early 1980s. And after that, all it was, you know, twice the incomes, but no change in the standard of living. And here we are 30, 40 years later, and the standard of living is much lower than it was back then. And people are working much harder for jobs that are, you know, that pay much less than they used to.
Yeah, I'm like, it's a very sobering thought. You know, I tend to be a feminist in a lot of ways. Women should have the opportunity to work, especially if you're in a bad situation. And what are you going to do? You got kids and you got to support them like everybody else. But at the same time, you're like, oh, gosh, I really wish I didn't have to, you know.
Well, look,
just take care of my kids. You know, so there, it's the option and having the able to support your family on a reasonable amount of work.
I mean, let's face it, no one wants to work. I mean, yes, there's this thing out there that's just kind of myth about people. They just love to get up and work. But no, what people love to do is have leisure. I mean, that's what you like. You work so that you can have leisure. And the problem is that now, because you're forced to work more, you have less leisure, which is not a good thing, particularly when one of the quote leisure activities is raising children. When you have at least one parent home as opposed to none, you're going to do a better job raising your children. And oh yeah, you're going to enjoy your life more. And that's, you know, that's part of the American dream that's just been erased away, you know, partly by secular changes. Let's face it, the world's population has grown. A lot of the industry has gone to other parts of the world, partly because American trade deals sent it there.
Well, yeah, but the worldwide economy, things are shifting, and things are going to balance out worldwide. So it's not all just because our leaders are not doing things right. It was going to naturally change based on having a worldwide, you know, trade going on.
Right. But we certainly accelerated that, you know, for the benefit of a handful. But more importantly, when we went off the gold standard and caused the cost of living to rise and the cost of production in this country to rise, that caused a lot of the industry to move overseas because it was too expensive to produce over here. And of course, it raised the cost of living. So on an individual basis, it made it more difficult, to live.
For example, we shouldn't have the highest tax rate for corporations in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That doesn't help us. Right. I mean, we can't create policies that make it the hardest place to make money in the world if you want to keep companies from moving overseas. It's just
and
not.
At the same time, we have all these tax loopholes that allow all the companies to keep their cash overseas, or they can have tax havens, tax inversions. Again, this comes down to that lobbying aspect of manipulating the economy for the benefit of a handful. We don't benefit from all that cash that Apple has made because A, they're producing so much in China, and B, they're keeping all their cash in Ireland, and the government is letting them. So the only people that really benefit are people at the top of Apple and the Chinese employees who get to produce.
Yeah. That's because all our policies go on in the tax code. Because we don't make laws anymore. You know, I had Alan Walensky, who was the assistant tax secretary, and he goes, everything's going on in our taxes. That's where policy gets made because it's too hard to get things through Congress. So you just create loopholes and different things in the tax code, and that's where things get done.
And I mean, let's face it, lobbyists have taken over the country. And a big reason for that is because the cost of everything has gone up. The cost of running a political campaign has gone up. I remember when Obama's 2008 campaign broke all records until he shattered his own record at the last one. And I don't know. My guess is Hillary Clinton's numbers are going to blow his away simply based on the amount of financial contributions I've seen compared to what he got, which were the highest. And, you know, if anyone, which is ironic because her family, her foundation, they have so much money. But if anyone has benefited from the lobbying or the lobbying side, it's her. I mean, I just saw this list. Literally every trade group in America is at the trough right now, and which is what scares me so much. You know, what scares me about Trump is that he's an unknown, but at least he doesn't have every financial institution and lobbying group on the planet basically setting policy for the nation, which is basically where we are now and where we're going in the future, unless we make a dramatic change.
If we don't clean up the tax code, we don't clean up that, we're hosed.
That's right.
Because that's where everything's, and people don't realize that's where everything's going on.
Unfortunately,
it's all in there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the only changes we're going to see in the tax code are going to be the ones that send us to outright socialism. And I don't even mean as a policy per what Bernie Sanders wants. I mean, we have Obamacare, for instance, and all these entitlements. And, you know, now I think it's 55% or 60% of the people in America have some entitlement of some kind. And that number is only going to go up as the economy weakens and the demographics, the baby boomers, all that, and the lack of funding for all these entitlements like Social Security and Medicare. So we're going to, you know, probably a lot sooner than people think, have a full-blown socialist tax model, in which case, get ready for 50% plus tax rates for the average person just on a federal basis.
Could already be beyond that? Because we pay for our own health care. We pay for a lot of our own services, but yet our taxes are pretty high. So if you compare us to a socialist country that get all those services paid for, we might already be at that level.
Well, yeah, that's the scary part because we don't have those taxes yet on a national level, but because of the increases in our cost of living for things like healthcare, we're almost doing that already. The problem is because of the demographics and because of, those dramatic and rapidly increasing trade deficits and budget deficits, the government is going to need more money. And that's even before considering the fact that you asked if we're in a recession. I think we're in the early stages of a depression. So they're going to have less tax receipts and they're going to need more money. They'll probably spend that money on wars and corporations tax benefits that, you know, even if they do raise the taxes on us, the corporations will still find loopholes. So the point is,
they have to.
That's right. Either way you do the math, we're going to have 50% plus tax rates on average federal. And And people say, no, that can never happen. What do you mean? That's what Europe is. And then Europe's even worse right now. Look what's going on there. They theoretically would need to raise taxes further going for, and they already have those socialist rates. So it's a sorry state of affairs. It's really kind of scary. And you know how every government in history has paid for such deficits? Printing money. And that's exactly what's going to happen here, which is why I work at one of the largest bullion dealers in America. And why I tell people you need to protect yourself with real money that can't be devalued, or certainly will maintain its value when the fiat currency is devalued.
Well, fiat currency has always been devalued over time. At some point, it just kind of goes out of existence, right? It just gets so watered down. But right now, we have a Federal Reserve that can print without us really knowing what's totally going on. It's transparent. My understanding from reports, and I don't know if they're all true, but they've printed upwards of $30 trillion.
Well, the amount of money that they've printed, we'll never know, because so much of it is now covert. It's kind of like, I think back at that TARP, you know, the lessons they've learned. One back in 2008, they were like a deer in headlights and were like, oh my God, there's a financial crisis here. How could we have not seen it? And the way they reacted were things like, oh, well, we got to get TARP done, but we needed the approval of Congress. And,
well, but that's, you know, ridiculous, because let's face it. They shut down Congress for $900 billion, right?
Well, that's
which
my
is
point.
A lot of money. But then they did a partial audit of the Fed, and we find out $16 trillion was what was
written. That's
so,
right.
So
that's
it was
right.
A big clown act.
My point is, and in 2006, they discontinued the publication of the M3 money supply. They said it was too expensive to do the work to figure out how much it was. But the point is that most of what they do now is covert. So when they say they, quote, ended QE, I can only laugh because, for one, their own balance sheet hasn't gone down a penny in the time that they are theoretically starting to unwind. And, of course, interest rates, despite them theoretically ending QE, are at all-time lows, as in the lowest in the history of the 250 years of this nation. And of course, you see the manipulation of the stock market, which runs up every single day in the exact same pattern, despite the worst fundamentals in history. Look, the fact is the Fed prints astronomic amounts of money. And the only reason the inflation in this country is not as bad as it is overseas is because we have the reserve currency. So we can print unlimited amounts and the rate of inflation goes up more like a frog in a pot than like you in a pot. And overseas, people don't realize, it's amazing how Americans, they're so secular because they think the world revolves around them. They don't realize there's only 300 million Americans, there's 7.2 billion other people. And of those 7.2 billion other people, the vast majority hold currencies that are at or near, or in many cases, way below their all-time low values. These people are really seeing major inflation, and in some cases hyperinflation, as we speak. Whereas here, it's funny, you know, I write an article for free every day at milesfranklin.com. Today's article, it's called, in the spirit of the political campaign, it's the inflation stupid, which is why you own precious metals. The fact is, they can say all they want about how inflation is low, but it's almost insulting to say that inflation is going up by less than 2% a year if you are a sentient being in this country who has rent or is trying to buy a house or has insurance, let alone health insurance, or is a child going to school.
Or if you just go make a trip to the local coffee shop and have to pay $5 for a simple latte. I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this daily. It starts adding up.
Yeah, I mean, even if they'll be like, oh, look, but the oil price fell. Yeah, I mean, it fell, but it's still much higher than it used to be. And oil energy is only a few percent of your overall budget. It's really the things that really, really kill people are housing, whether you're renting. You know, rents are rising parabolically at an all-time high right now, or buying. You know, no one could afford to buy. No one could get a mortgage right now, or insurance. I mean, God, health insurance is a huge...
Health insurance, I think, is the one that's really off the charts. The other thing is secondary education, or if you're putting your kids through private school. I mean, we're in the top, you know, 2% or something of income when I was checking it out, and I can't believe we are, my husband and I, and we don't feel like we have any money. You know what? We're sending two kids to college.
Remember when a millionaire was a big deal? A millionaire, right? It was a big deal. A millionaire, you're still terrified when you're a millionaire these days. First of all, because when you die, they're going to take half of it anyway.
but if you're sending kids, I got my kid in college. I have my daughter's at a private school, which we feel strong. She's at a you know, I can go on and on about why we do this, but it's, everybody has their right to do whatever they want, but we pay money for it. And, but we feel like we don't have any money after at the end of the day. And when they're both in college, oh my God, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, when you're in the 1%, you know, you feel like it's okay. But when you're in the, as you say, even the 2 to 10%, it's at the point where, yeah, I have money, but so much, it could be gone so quickly. There's so many things out there that could take it so quickly. It's just not enough because of the inflation of everything, let alone, yeah, I mean, I'm just putting my daughter into preschool next month for the first time, and that costs a lot of money.
Well,
and
now imagine having a couple.
How much will college cost?
Well, I know. Right? I have a couple people. My son's at Northwestern in Chicago, and yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then you have my daughter. She's at a visitation high school in the Twin Cities. I think you're not in the Twin Cities. You're on the West
Denver.
Coast. Denver. Okay, yeah. So she's going to a private school in Twin Cities, which, you know, it's a chunk of money. And by the end of the day, we're thinking, oh my gosh, we don't have any money. And
yeah,
so now I'm watching what coffee I buy every day and where we're getting our, I don't know, whatever. We can't go out as eat as much because that stuff starts to really add up. And I got to give it, you know, I got to buy my kids. Next thing you know, we're going to Boston for my daughter's hockey tournament. Geez, I don't have any money left over. And so that's the daily grind. Now, when you think about it, you know, how much money we're college educated. We both have graduate advanced degrees, you know, and all these things. And I'm thinking the average person, think of how much they struggle if we're, you know, I shouldn't be complaining, but the average person, I can't even imagine.
Well, that's the state of America, and that's the whole thing with the recovery. Again, you know, they talk about a recovery, and they say there's more jobs. The jobs they say, and they're all fictitious jobs, everyone knows that, but the jobs they say are jobs in, for instance, retail and waiters and bartenders. The problem is the numbers tell you that retail is doing as bad as it was at the bottom of the 2008-2009 crisis. And so is the restaurant data. People are not going out to dinner anymore. Yet they'll tell you that there's all these new jobs in retail and in restaurants. I mean, it's just a lie. The experience of the average person is, you know, I wrote an article almost a year ago in October of last year. It was titled "The Worst Economy of Our Lifetimes." But that was nothing compared to the way things are now. Everything that I was looking back then is much, much worse now. And now it's a global thing. China's falling apart. Japan's falling apart. We have negative interest rates everywhere. Now we have the Brexit, which is only going to force, you know, the European Union apart, which is going to cause more cutbacks in spending and fearfulness and falling currencies. And, you know, right now the oil price and the commodity prices are, you know, near multi-decade lows, which is only going to cause more defaults, et cetera. The point is, there's no one out there that's benefiting except for the 1%. That's where almost all of the money from TARP all the way up to QE4 and whatever else they're doing now, that's where the money has gone. And it's created, you know, this illusion of a stock market that tells us something that's so detached from reality, it's almost appalling. It's gotten to the point where even the mainstream shills, I mean, day after day I'm reading articles about how the big banks, the top mutual fund and hedge fund investors go, I just don't get it. And it's, well, how can you not get it? Can you not see the money printing? Can you not see them tell you we will do whatever it takes? Did you see after the Brexit, every central bank said we will do everything in our power. We will provide unlimited liquidity to make sure everything's fine. And sure enough, just like when the Fed raised rates in December and the yuan devaluation in August, sure enough, the market pops right back up because they're trying to create an illusion. And we started at the beginning of the call.
That's crazy. Because
that doesn't match reality. Yeah.
Well, because we should be in a recession. I mean, we should have a healthy natural recession about now, right? We haven't had that and they just keep propping it up. So we don't even have what we really need just naturally, right? Every 7 years there's a recession, and I don't even know if that's natural. That could just be built so they can take their profit off the top.
Well, but that's yet another part of the difference between reality and what they tell you. I mean, look, no, you have to have recessions. I mean, that's what, if you have capitalism, that's what happens. You have boom and bust. It's happened.
Yeah, but
forever.
They're accelerated so that people could take profits and.
They're not accelerated. What happens is they're holding back. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Right, they're holding back right now, but.
But the point is you can't stop recession. And the fact is that we have this supposed greater recovery with the worst, all these things we're talking about across the board. The only thing that's gone up is debt and real unemployment. And it's now the second longest, quote, expansion in U.S. history. What does that tell you about how desperate they've been to prevent this recession, which must come? I mean, what will it look like if they keep saying that the GDP growth for the next 5 years, it'll be the longest expansion in history, except it'll be one where you have the lowest labor participation rate and the lowest home ownership and the highest debt and the highest entitlements and the biggest budget deficit. That will be the longest expansion in history.
But I think for me, who sees all that, it's actually kind of scary because you start to wonder, well, why? You know, what's really that's scary. And when I look at the stock market, my understanding is that there's more money that's been taken out by the average Joe over the last year.
Another thing.
And so how can these numbers be? You know, and so you hear these numbers and then you see what else is going on. And being so disconnected, it actually is kind of scary because then you wonder what's really going on.
Yeah. And forget the average Joe. The average Joe has no savings. I mean, more than half of Americans have no savings. The average retail investor in this country is long gone, because those who didn't lose their shirt in the dot-com bubble, what were reflated in the 2005 to 2007, whatever you call it, housing boom, they've lost everything there. And now the economy's been going downhill since. There's no more retail participation.
There's still a lot of 401k money and there's still a lot of pension money.
But I'm talking about percent of retail participation. Yeah, there are 401ks. Have always existed, but there's a lot less of that money than there used to be.
Because they're finding different ways to put it, different ways.
And it's highly concentrated now in much fewer people, because most people were wiped off the map in 2000 and 2008. And what you're talking about, more people taking money out, it's not the retail. Retail left the building long ago. Now it's institutional money that's been leaving. And for instance, in these last 4 months, the market's rallied to record highs. The problem is we've had record institutional outflows from stocks. And who's been buying it? The central banks. In fact, the central banks haven't been admitting it now. The Japanese.
Well, they have
Swiss,
to, because everybody's like, oh, come on. What's
right.
going on?
I mean,
you have
the point
to
is,
be buying
you now have central banks admitting that not only are we buying bonds with our QE, the biggest three, the Japan, Switzerland, and China, admit we are buying stocks with printed money. They're telling you that. So, of course, the United States is, and the ECB is buying corporate and junk bonds. Of course, they're buying
stocks,
too.
Yeah, but then they're buying out the corporations.
Yes, exactly. I wrote an article a few months ago called The Ultimate Endgame of Communism, and I wrote it after the Japanese central bank, which is the craziest of all, because they started this process long before all of us, because their demographics, their average age is 10 years older, so their bust started 10 years earlier. They admitted that they own more than half of all the stocks in the country, the ETFs, and as a result, they're a top 10 holder of more than 90% of the stocks in the Nikkei average.
Okay, well, let's say if they keep doing – okay, let's imagine this process keeps going. They could get to a point where they own 50% or more of all the corporations in our country. Okay, so now let's say that happens and we're essentially a completely government-owned thing. Do you believe that's a grand conspiracy, or do you think we're just all clueless and it's just happening because we don't know what else to do?
Well, you ask very good questions, Sarah, because especially in my world, you know, I report on alternative media things and, you know, for instance, the manipulation of gold, which I've been talking about for 15 years and proving, because I'm a Wall Street analyst by background. So I don't just, have conspiracy theories. I prove it.
Well, because I don't like conspiracy theories. I liked it to be real. Otherwise, nobody takes it seriously.
Right.
So I want to know, is it possible for somebody to actually, to a group of people to actually plan this? Or is it just we're just so desperate and so out of control that this is what happens?
Right. And that's why this is such a great question, because in my world, I am exposed to many, many people who have theories about this, and many people say very strongly it's the elites, it's the Rothschilds, it's the Bilderbergs, it's the bankers, it's this. And look, I mean, yes, there's definitely a lot of people out there who have similar goals. Like, for instance, every one of the major Western nations has a goal of maintaining the status quo of fiat currency. But to believe they're all getting together when, first of all, they all hate each other, they don't even speak the same language, they have completely different goals, to think that a small group of people are planning this. I mean, you can't make up fiction stories about how look like what's going on in Japan with their helicopter money. No, I believe, as I've called them, that it's just a bunch of Keystone Cops. They wake up every day playing defense. The fact is, these Keystone Cops happen to be armed with printing presses and care of Wall Street, some of the most diabolical modern financial and trading technology around. They can hide everything. The Fed can hide all its money printing. They can trade offshore in high frequency trading and hide what they're doing. And they're very good at manipulating markets and economic data, to the point where they've been able to kick the can for a long time. But the point is, at some point, and that's how we started the call, rubber hits the road.
But if they can hide everything and not be transparent, you could hide it for a long time.
Well, they have been hiding it for a long time. The problem
is that the average person on the street starts to feel it.
Yeah, you have practical limits. Like, you can only grow debt so much before you can't pay it off, and everyone knows it. And again, like I said, the average currency on the planet, I'm not talking about in like Zimbabwe, I'm talking about the average currency on the planet is at or near, or in some cases, way below previous all-time lows. I mean, the euro, I mean, looking at it right now, it's about to break under 1.1. It's pretty close to the lows we haven't seen in 15 years. Look at the British pound after the Brexit. It's at like a 25 or 30 year low. The Japanese yen, the yuan is at its lowest level. It's being walked down, and soon it'll be ran down. And then you have all the commodity currencies, because commodities care of all the money printing. There's been way too much capacity in just about everything. So you're seeing the Australian dollar hit a new low, and the Canadian dollar, and the Mexican peso. And I mean, you name it across the board. There isn't a currency on the planet that isn't getting slaughtered.
Okay, so why can't we just be smart and say, okay, we are not paying these debts back. Let's get ourselves to something fiscally responsible. Let's reset the dollar. Let's shave off these debts. Okay, we might piss off people so much we're going to have wars, but okay, well, let's just deal with it. But we need to have a healthy environment long term. I mean, it's bankruptcy at a mass level.
Well, you can't do it now. First of all, we have the quote reserve currency, and the only reason it's worth more than the others is because of its liquidity. If you went in and said we're not going to pay our debt, the dollar would cease to be the reserve currency immediately. That's why it's so scary when Trump in his campaigning has been saying, he's acting like he's a businessman. Well, I'll go up to all these guys like the Chinese, and I'll do deals with them, he's acting like he can cut the debt down with a business
deal.
If you do that, the dollar ceases to be the reserve currency overnight, and the dollar crashes. And then
he won't do it because he'll be educated on what's going on, and then he won't do it. He's not. He actually, I think, is probably smarter than that. So he's just talking.
Oh yeah, he'll be educated on. But you're saying, why can't we do it? Because that's what he's proposing. And then you said he won't do it, because of course he won't do it. But the point is,
my question is, and then are we stuck? I mean, at some point, it's going to happen naturally. I mean, we either do it, we either do a planned bankruptcy and a planned dollar reset, or we're going to be forced to do a bankruptcy and a dollar reset in a completely chaotic way.
It's called kicking the can.
There's a point where the can doesn't kick anymore because there's
It's in your life too. You prevent the worst case scenario as much as you can. I mean, why would any politician want to just destroy if he came in there and actually did that and said, hey, China, guess what? We're going to make you discount our debt.
Nobody wants to be the one that plans it. Nobody wants to take on that responsibility.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're saying, why can't we do it? That's why. Because no one, why won't Janet Yellen or Ben Bernanke do the right thing and stop printing money? Because they don't want it all to crash down on their watch. I mean, it's going to crash down anyway. And the more things that they do, the worse it's going to get in the big picture. More importantly, the worse it's going to be for your children and their children, but they don't care. It's just like anyone else. It's trapped rats in any situation in life. You don't want it to end on your watch, and you certainly don't want to be blamed for it.
Well, but it's like it to you personally. Let's say, you keep kicking your own can down the road because you want to pay your bills. You don't want to get – next thing you know, you have creditors calling all over the place, and you have your hair coming out and standing on end. You're so stressed out, and creditors are calling you all the time. You can't even make any bills. I mean, that's essentially what's going to happen to our country.
That's right, but our country is still the most powerful, at least printing press, in the world, so they don't have to deal with creditors the way you have to deal with creditors personally. They can kick the can longer than the average average Joe.
But
when does the can
hit the wall?
Because
if this could go on for another 20 years. When does the can hit the wall?
Not 20 years. Look,
when?
The debt is growing parabolically. The currencies are crashing. The economies are crashing now.
So when does the dollar? That's why I'm pushing you against the wall to answer the question.
Yeah.
The dollar needs to be reset, and it's going to crash at some point. When will the can hit the wall and it can no longer be kicked?
Well, look, that, I mean, that's the
I know.
$86,000 question.
Sure.
I mean, the thing is, look, things are getting much worse. And around the world, they're really getting much worse. That's why we're having all these social revolutions everywhere.
We're lucky to have the reserve currency.
I mean, you know what could do it? I can name 50 things. I mean, the collapse of Europe. What if Italy has their referendum this year and opts out, or the French opt out, or the Italian banks don't get the bailout they need, or they do get it and people trash the euro because they see hyperinflation?
England
or
voted
what if something happens in Brazil or Turkey?
Turkey's
a million
scary.
Things.
Turkey, that coup is scary because now he's taking over. He's essentially becoming an Islamic dictator. He got rid of like 20,000.
50,000 now.
Education. Oh, my God. Educational leader. All the deans, all these teachers, they got rid of anybody in any kind of position that they think can undermine their authority. To me, that's scary. I mean, to see a NATO ally turn into a complete dictator is scary.
What I mean by, you know, the world can handle these things when the world isn't already falling apart, when you don't have, when the currencies of the world, including the Turkish lira, are not collapsing and we're not having record unemployment and social revolutions and inflation and financial crises and Deutsche Bank, the largest bank in Europe, on the verge of collapse. When you don't have these things, you can handle a Brexit. You can handle a crisis in Turkey. But the thing is, we're seeing the crises everywhere right now, all for the same reasons. And it's because fiat currency regimes are Ponzi schemes, as you mentioned before. There hasn't been a single fiat currency regime in history that has survived. And there's also never been a time in history where every currency on the planet was in a fiat currency regime. And they're all tied to the dollar, which is scary, which is the scariest part, because we have this maniacal Federal Reserve, which is, you know, like you said, how much are they printing? 16 trillion? 60 trillion? How much more will they have to print?
Well, according to Jim Rickards, they're thinking it's at like 30 trillion. I don't know who has the right information, but they think it's really out there. But Brexit, they actually haven't implemented anything. They voted to exit, but they're not doing anything at this point.
Well, I mean, it just happened a month ago. But the point is, you know, and again, that's another thing. People who are desperately trying to cling to status quo be like, well, they'll announce, maybe they'll announce some changes in the UK constitution so that they can stay in. No, they're gone. They are so fed up. They're as fed up as people like me who are actually going to vote for someone like Donald Trump, who I hate, just because I don't want what's in anymore. I want the status quo over. That's the problem. That's why they voted for the Brexit. And that's why they're going to do this everywhere. People want out. And that's probably why Erdogan may well have orchestrated this, because he knows very well people are pissed off there too. And he's trying to solidify his power. Power is being lost around the world.
That's scary.
And it's scary what's going on here. I mean, we could have we are likely to have a president who no one has any clue. He's a loose cannon. Who knows what he'll do? But he's the best of the lot. What's going to happen in France? When the National Front takes over, or in Spain when Catalonia secedes?
Will we just continue? Because we're having essentially a slow burn. It's just slowly burning out.
That's right.
Can this slow burn just happen until we have political unrest, because the average person can't do things and then they're forced to do it that way? Or do you think the dollar would just overinflate? I mean,
what the situation is it's the whole fiat currency regime. It's not even a matter of the dollar. The dollar is going to be the last to go. I've said it all along, because it's the most liquid. So you're going to see every currency in the world fall first. And it's exactly what's happening. If your currency falls, like you're in Europe right now, and, you know, some people are buying gold with it, some are buying Bitcoin, some are trying to find any other kind of real wealth they can find. There's not many choices. And others are going, well, if I want old cash, I better hold the dollar, because it's more liquid and stable than the euro. And so you're going to see currency after currency crash. The strong dollar in and of itself hurts us in many other ways, because that means our exports crash.
Sure.
It means all the debts that were borrowed in dollars can't be repaid.
Our real economy is hurting because of it.
Yeah, our multinational earnings are going to crash, which is quite a problem when you're trading at record high stock market valuations. So it's better. I'd rather be here in America, where people are fleeing into the dollar than fleeing out of it. But the point is, that in itself is just exacerbating the problems overseas, and
if all the different economies, all the different currencies crash, which is what the process is going on now, the dollar will be a lot stronger. Could we be in a position in the United States to be able to say, okay, you guys are all in a weak position. We could do an overnight reset and still maintain the currency position if we do it at the right time.
Well, I mean, that, you know, again, that's a part conspiracy thing, you know, of what, you know, who has power to make these decisions. But look, let's face it.
Well, because something has to happen.
Yes. Look. Well, but it doesn't have to be something that we control. I mean, a lot of these other the people in Europe don't look like they're in much control right now of their
fate,
right?
Well, I'd like to have it not be a complete chaotic mess, because that's scarier than being able to have some intellectual strategy and actually do something smart.
Well, I'd like that to be the case. I'd like a lot of things in life. Of course, you're assuming that people who have shown the unbelievably least amount of intellectual strategy would be able to do things that would be the best intellect. But look, let's face it. Just look at what's going on everywhere around the world and what has gone on here. For instance, we're talking about TARP. Everything that happens is reactionary, okay? We will react when we have to. When they lose control of, say, the stock market. I mean, that's the biggest thing. That's why they profit up all day long.
It's reactionary because nobody has enough power to do anything about it. And that's essentially what you're saying.
Yes, there's nothing you can't. Remember, we have more debt than anybody, okay? We can't be, we don't have, the only leverage we have is the fact that our dollar is more liquid than the others.
I'm just throwing this out there. All the currencies crash, essentially all the big power currencies crash, and ours is still strong, that is the one point in history where we could do something.
Well, no.
Why not?
It's not that simple. Well, because first of all, it's not strong. If all currencies crash, it's not even saying the dollar's strong. If all currencies crash, that means you're probably in World War III.
Well, you're talking about
7 billion people. And
okay,
our
economy
but
the alternative is nobody's in control. Everything's going to be chaos. The dollar's going to crash along with everything else. Well, then how do you fix it? How do we get ourselves into any kind of healthy situation?
I'm just saying,
what's our path to health?
A scenario of every currency crashing, which, as you said, and I'm saying, is happening now, is not a good thing for the United States. First of all,
I'm not saying it's good.
We owe $20 trillion to these people.
I never said it was good. I'm just saying that could be our window to solve something and get into a healthy
scenario. Here's the answer.
Is there any path to health?
The answer is, because I get a lot throughout all of my talks, people who want to believe that something good can come of it. What's good will come when this system ends and we start with a system that works.
Well, I know, and that's what I'm saying. At the window to change the system and not just completely collapse and we're all in chaos in the dark ages for another 100 years could be at that point in time where it's –
Yeah, could be.
That's what
could
I'm
be.
Saying.
But it won't necessarily be. We don't know how things will play out. It could be a worst-case scenario. It could be like we're living in Turkey or Greece or Brazil, which, by the way, are you know, theoretically first-world countries, but you know they're not acting like them right now. It could be like that, or maybe it won't be like that. Or maybe it'll be in Detroit, but not in New York. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
and
we some positive things with the technology sectors and some other things. And we do have a lot of assets. So there are a lot of positives that we can spin out of this if we can just have some smarts. I know there's a lot of people that care that are trying to figure out solutions.
I hear you completely, but you have to understand, you're interviewing me because you're asking me as someone who's an expert on money, okay? Financial assets, but particularly money, what do I think? I don't really care in the context of what I do and what I'm trying to help people prepare for. I'm not looking in terms of, what will the future be, a better future, and what will be the positives? I don't really care.
How do we keep this from just being a complete disaster?
We don't do anything. We don't do anything. We can't control it. We're all little fish in a tiny little sardines in a giant sea. It's been cast in stone by bigger forces than any of us, including the people in power now, can have any control over. And it's the end game of the world's biggest fiat currency Ponzi scheme. And what we can do as a people, if we want to have positive things going forward, is to prepare for it. And I've never said it's going to be Armageddon. Maybe it will be. Maybe it won't be. Maybe there'll be some great reset that'll work out. But to me, I think you have to see the entire, all these debts that can't be paid off are going to be written off, and either going to be written off by default, by who knows how,
well,
maybe Donald Trump,
or
maybe, or more likely by hyperinflation, because that's what history says all governments do, and that's what they're all doing right now.
Okay,
they're all
so
hyperinflating the currency.
The preparation is to have real money, real assets. And so real assets can be land or all sorts of other things, but you sell bullion, so gold and silver.
It's not a matter of sell. It's not a matter of sell. Yes, I work in bullion, but I've been saying these things for 15 years. I've only been working Miles Franklin
okay.
for 5 years. I've been
Let's
writing
reword.
These things for
Let's reword
years.
It. I'm sorry, not sell, but that's what you promote because you think that is the real, you have real value. And I actually collect silver. I get
right.
it. I'm not trying to say that you're a salesman trying to sell something. What I'm saying is that you really think that's a great alternative. Land, is land a good alternative?
Well, again, you know, we're talking about preserving value, and in many cases, preserving value during what will be, look, it's indisputed. Times are going to get much worse in this country. Whether they get Armageddon-like, like in Turkey or Greece, I don't know, but they're going to get much worse. And there's going to be a huge drop in the value of financial assets in real terms. Maybe they're hyperinflated, maybe they crash, but they're at the most overvalued levels in history and with the worst fundamentals. You're going to lose in most assets. Physical gold and silver, which not only are the only assets that have ever protected you over time, but also have been suppressed to historically undervalued levels, are a no-brainer. I also personally have become a big believer in Bitcoin. I think that people are going to embrace it to store value, and I also think it's going to be the next money as we move forward, but that's another story. But then you say, well, what other assets are there? There's not a heck of a lot if you're talking about, like, if you're.
So, is it smart if people have other assets to sell them and get into gold and silver? Or
yeah.
is it good to hold on to other assets? That's what I'm getting at. You know,
well, you know
what
it is? Because a lot of people think, oh, gold, silver, physical assets will protect you. That's why I get asked a lot about land. But land is a very generic term. First of all, gold may be a physical asset, but it's also the world's most liquid asset. That's what makes it money. Land is the most illiquid asset, particularly that we, you know, we got bubbles everywhere. And if you have, you know, declining financial conditions around the world, I'm not sure why people think land is going to be so great. I mean, yes, there are certain properties that have values above and beyond that make them more liquid. But for instance, agricultural land's been going down. It's been plummeting in value because there's an oversupply of most agricultural commodities. So unless you plan on subsisting, I'm not sure why you would, not you, but why people would think land is going to be better than stocks or dollars. I mean,
well,
you know
people
difficult.
Collect other things because they're saying, well, we've got to diversify. So land, art, other things.
Ah, art, but, art, perfect. Perfect timing. Guess what? The article I just read, the last article before you called me today, Christie's, you know, Sotheby's, Christie's.
Yeah.
That's another thing. People have been buying these high-end things. Christie's just reported a 37% decline year over year in sales volume. And if you've been, you know, you look around, you see that the high-end real estate markets in New York, in San Francisco, in Miami, in London, my God, London prices, I kid you not, are down 25% since the Brexit. That's a month ago. So we're talking about people who thought, well, I'll buy
crashing.
And you
high-end
know, I mean,
goods
we're talking
crash.
About, the high-end has crashed. The low-end crashed a long time ago. I guess it's, you know, it's bobbed up a little bit. But, you know, to say, I mean, what low-end real estate would people buy? I mean, if you're going to live
well,
there, that's not an investment.
Can't there
that's
be simple things like alcohol and cigarettes and toilet paper?
Well, that's bartering. I mean,
you know, I mean, that ends up having some real value.
Well, that's well, then you're talking about if you're buying those, you're assuming a worst-case scenario,
sure.
a bartering environment. And some people assume that. You know, I wrote an article years ago. You can Google all these things. It was called Protection Continuum. Because I get people asking me all the time, well, what should I do? You know, not just with gold and silver. Because, look, you know, there's a lot of decisions to make. I'm not just saying buy gold and silver. I'm saying consider all these scenarios and, you know, where you want to live and who you network with. But, you know, the article is called Protection Continuum. And I said, look, basically, everyone's got to make their own decision about how far they want to go down the rabbit hole. I mean, I said a 1 out of 10 means move to Manhattan and put all your cash in Citibank, and a 10 out of 10 means move to a desert island, bury gold in the sand, and forage for food. I mean, you need to start thinking about these things about what is best for you and your family and your circumstances to prepare. Because if you don't prepare at all, you are just going to get slaughtered. I mean, if you have financial assets, they're going to get slaughtered. You know, most job sectors are already doing really badly. They're not going to get any better. Certainly not if currencies are crashing around the world. And, you know, it's a matter of, you know, you do your best to try to, you know, prepare for the worst case scenario and hope it doesn't happen.
Well, let's talk about gold and silver a little bit. Silver, isn't it? And traditionally, silver is compared to gold, it has much more value than it is right currently.
Right. Silver is far more manipulated. It's kind of, they say, the canary in the coal mine, because gold and silver have a 100% directional correlation. So you're not going to have soaring silver, but to hold the price of gold down. Both are held down dramatically. And if one goes, the other is going to go with it. And that's why silver, they've had to make great efforts to hold it down, considering the fact that there's far less silver out there. Almost all the silver ever produced has been consumed by industry. Because that's another inconvenience to the powers that be about silver, is that it's not just used for money, it's used for everything. So there's so little inventory. We have record low inventories. Now we've had peak production of gold and silver. But in silver's case, it's particularly scary because 2/3 of all the silver is the byproduct of copper, lead, and zinc mines, which have been oversupplied by all this money printing, creating capacity we don't need. So they're shutting down those mines. So you're talking about big declines in production at a time where you have record demand, which is rising because of all the currencies collapsing, and record low inventories. So the gold to silver ratio, as a lot of people look at it, meaning the price of gold to the price of silver, is way, way above historical norms at a time where the fundamentals for silver are getting more powerful each day. And again, all it takes is a tiny percentage of the world to re-monetize it in their minds. Forget what governments are doing. I mean, and that's it. I remember, you know, the Chinese word for money is silver. The French word for money is silver. People just don't realize silver has a longer history of being money than gold does. And because it's more affordable, certainly right now, it's what people are going to flock to, and they're scared. And that's why we've had record demand.
So what is the historical ratio between gold and silver, and where is it today?
Right. Okay. Well, you know, the historical ratio in many cases was fixed by governments, and some cases it was because of the way it traded. It just worked out that way. But the fact is, throughout history, silver has come out of the ground on average about 15 times more than gold. So for every ounce of gold that's been mined throughout history, there's generally been 15 of silver. That's just kind of the ratios of their scarcity. The problem is that, one, most of that silver has been used by industry, but more importantly, it's depleting faster.
So the quantity of silver to gold has changed now.
Yeah, now it's 9-to-1 because a lot of the silver is found more shallow, and they've got it all out. Plus, you have all these copper and zinc mines going out.
Sure,
so
that makes sense.
We're talking about it's produced at 9-to-1 and it's trading at 70 or 75-to-1.
Okay, so at 75 to what historically, if it's at 75-to-1, historically, what has it been? 50-to-1?
15.
15-to-1.
History.
So
it's only been in this ridiculous range of, let's call it 40 to 90,
so
since the futures exchange started in the 70s.
So just at a very basic level, it's underpriced. It should be at 75-to-1 or 70-to-1.
Absolutely.
And right now it's at 15-to-1. So it's completely underpriced just based on historical ratios, let alone the fact that gold is being suppressed.
Yeah, and that's why we have a lot of people who are buying silver, and why silver in dollar terms is actually for the retail investor, not for the institutions and governments can't buy silver because there's nothing to buy. It's all used by industry and retail. But the retail industry is spending as much on silver as it is on gold for that very reason, and particularly people Yeah, exactly, because it's more affordable. If you only have $20,000 or $30,000 to spend or $5,000, you're going to buy silver. If you have $2 or $3 million, first of all, you're not going to be able to find that kind of silver because it doesn't exist, and you're more likely to buy some gold with it. But silver we've had shortages in the silver market in our business in 2008, 2011, 2013, 2015. And, you know, when we have the next crisis, which in my mind has already started, it's only going to get worse, we will have a shortage like we've never seen before, where there'll be no more bullion dealers because we're going to run out. In 2008, we ran out for 3 months, the entire industry, and that will happen again.
Yeah, interesting. Wow. Okay, so how can people get hold of you and learn more about you? You have a blog. What's going on with you, and how can people learn about you?
Right. Again, I'm the marketing director. Miles Franklin has been around for 27 years.
The smartest guy at Miles Franklin, from what I hear.
Yes, according to Andy Schechtman, our president. And he's been around for a long time, too.
Him he's
and
his great. Dad I love Andy Schechtman.
Yeah, him and his dad started the firm 27 years ago. We have not had a single registered complaint all that time, which is pretty impressive for a non-regulated industry, except, by the way, in our home state of Minnesota, the only state in this country which is regulated on a state level.
That's great.
I write every day for free. I do these podcasts, several of them each week. You can go to milesfranklin.com. You can email me at ahoffman@milesfranklin.com, or you can call us at 800-822-8080.
Okay, and I'll have that up on the radio page as well. And thank you so much for joining us today. We got kind of heated, but I love that stuff.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I love the back and forth. I love the questions.
Yeah, I love to argue with people. So as long as you're okay with it, it's fun. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you.
And we do not have enough time to finish this interview. I apologize to everyone, but it will be up on podcast for you to listen to up on my website at sarahwestall.com or at 100 different podcast channels, digital channels across the internet. You should be able to find it. But if not, go to my website and you can get a subscription there and get an RSS feed and get it wherever. So I hope everyone has a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.